Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is April 6th. Andy, how we doing?
Brendan, I'm doing great.
Chipper, are you gruntled?
I'm gruntled. I've been, you know, the media center is a delightful place. I'm well fed.
Oh, you're lying to the people. I'm getting so many angry texts from you about the media center.
What are you talking about?
I don't know if you enjoy the company entirely. I don't know. And then I had a call with you the other day. We're talking ideas and things. You just sprinkle in the conversation. I'm going to get a pimento cheese sandwich. We go on. We keep talking about it. We talk about ideas. What should we write about the Masters? What should we talk about? We're talking 5 minutes. Just interjected in there, like 5 minutes later, God, this sandwich sucks. And then we just go back. I didn't hear anything more about the pimento cheese sandwich, but that's your official review.
But throwing me under the bus.
I'm not throwing you under the bus. Yeah. I'm just saying this is the scatterbrain calls we have. That's your review of the media center for me.
You're taking takes that I'm not ready to trot out.
All right.
Public.
Okay.
You know,
all right,
one man's all right. Takes or his decisions when you've broken the take code, you know, there's a demarcation of, you know, the person
did
with
you
the
have
take,
an NDA on me, your pimento cheese like
no
Westy?
The person that has to take, you know, gets the right to trot it out. You can't right. Be just, you know,
all right, well, we'll look for a more, you
know,
flushed
I
out
struggle.
Take on it.
I haven't been in a media center in a while since the PGA, and that was a little different. And it's like, you know, you got people all around you.
It's
all
good.
The time. It's an energy I'm not really ready for, you know.
People in general, or what do
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah, people okay. That, you know, there's stuff going on. I got Netflix cameras that are invading my personal space.
Yes, yes, give us more, give us more.
You know, yeah. I you know, they aren't trying to film anything I'm doing, but, you know, they're in there, and it does, you know, I can't get down and sit in my chair, so, you know, what am I supposed
but
to do?
Other than that, it's a delightful experience.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
The best, it's, you know, they're trying to win you over. I don't know if they're trying to win you over, they just, it's Augusta. They do everything.
They do it right.
Top tier, and it's a fantastic media center.
I mean, they have the benefit of coming back to the same place every year, which is a huge thing.
Yes, sure.
Because they can set up infrastructure. You know, as you can imagine, being at a place with portable infrastructure for an entire week,
you get Porta Johns.
Yeah, there's some downsides.
Country club level
that.
Bathrooms
yeah.
And things like that. Yeah, that's a great setup in there. What else are your impressions? You know, I think pimento cheese reviews is not the most original content idea when it comes to Masters, so we won't go down that road.
I mean, I will say that I was disappointed. I'm a texture. I like texture.
Oh, you're talking about, you're going to the
yeah,
sandwich.
I like yeah. Texture, yeah. And there's a lack of texture in
it. It's a divisive issue. We have the original recipe. Someone sent us, like, what the clubhouse recipe on the
I
napkin
feel like if
is,
it was
and we got to reshare
bread,
that.
Which would obviously be impossible to do at a mass scale.
Southerners in your ass. Well, we got this Chicago boy telling us how to do our bread on the pimento cheese sandwich.
I just think that a toasted bread would really give it some needed structure.
Okay. All right. What else are your impressions from now? You've walked around 1.5 days. Today was a washout, dumping rain. Rory's down to 2-1 with all the rain that they've got. Soaking the course.
Do you want to talk about
congressional
Rory?
2011?
Let's talk about
on.
Rory.
What?
I just, you know, the press conference was just interesting, I thought.
Oh, is that the official opinion? It was interesting?
I just, you know, I love Rory. And I think what I love about Rory is I feel like,
you know, we all say we love Rory right before we're about to give him a pop. What are you gonna say?
Sometimes I think it sounds like if like you were talking about golf.
Yeah.
About like, yeah, you know what? It's golf. Like, it's something I do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is other things. You know, it's not like I feel like I don't get answers of like if somebody asks you about like what do you do for a living? You would talk a little bit differently than what Rory talks about for golf. And, you know, at this point in life, I just don't.
So you're suggesting maybe he doesn't have a maniacal focus that ultra competitive golf demands at this point. Is that what you're?
Well,
and is that a good
so
or bad?
So I sat
thing?
Through the Rory press conference, and then I sat through the Tiger press conference, and it's like, you know, somebody asked Tiger about like was coming back here and competing part of like your drive to make this Herculean, effectively Herculean recovery,
mm-hmm.
and it's like absolutely, like I love competing, and you hear Rory, and it's like, yeah, you know. It's just like almost an apathy towards it. And I don't know if this is his mind games that he's trying to play to get over the hump here.
Make him feel.
But it to me, it just is, he's uber talented in anything he would do. He could win this week. He absolutely could win this week. And I would not be surprised. But at the same time, I think like part of this is he's a guy that like is interested in other things. And I think one of the things with golf is that if you are not like so into being the greatest player in the world or being better than all your peers, hating losing.
Nicholas said he won 86. He wasn't really a golfer anymore. Is that just a once in a generation thing? It doesn't really actually happen. It was just sort of a one-off fantasy thing. I mean, I think occasionally it happens.
It can pop,
right?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins. He's right. Very talented. Like, right. And but at the same time, it's just.
Would you be surprised? It seems like you're telling me you might be surprised.
I'm not. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins. Okay. Like, you can't count him out. But I think it explains a lot of like the last 5 years.
Yeah, he's apparently switching golf balls. You know, Thursday night at Valero, in between rounds at Valero, you know, it's just it's going to be windy, it's wet. I've just made a joke about the rain. We got soaked, and then we are talking Rory. But this is the first of what we're gonna have, five straight podcasts we're gonna do.
Yeah,
Wednesday,
yeah,
Thursday,
Tiger.
Friday. We have the full setup here at the Dratty Cabin in Augusta. We are back. It's so good to be back. We're gonna have what, daily podcasts. The preview podcast is always a fun one to do. And you know, a big reason we're back is because of Beach Dratty. They came in, they helped sponsor the house, get us down here. It's been a couple of years. The pandemic has, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, abated a little bit. We're getting back to normal. So, you know, it's been awesome to get down here for 2 days. I cannot wait for the delights that actual tournament will play.
Hopefully we get a slide tackle this year. Maybe a balloon anecdote or two. A big man tumbling down, you know, on a swing. I mean, who knows what this week will provide? Hopefully it just provides an ounce of 2019. But it's going to be a great week, and we're here because of Beach Dratty, the official clothier.
Clothier? Is that the brand? Clothier. Is that the is apparel clothier? What's the preferred nomenclature?
Clothier
there?
Sounds fancier.
All right. Well, they've been friends of the program really since we first ever came to the Masters 4 or 5 years ago. It's great to have them on board again for another year. They're really good people, dedicated, you know, maniacally dedicated to what they're making. Maybe
they
unlike
sent us,
Rory.
They sent us some gear, scripting.
Some scripting. We do have scripting. And let me tell you, it's much better than any scripting. It's actual stuff you'd wear.
Scripting.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if we're allowed to.
What's your favorite thing?
Other
what's your
brands.
Favorite thing you got?
I got a Zach short. Look, I don't want to say this was hyped up. It was hyped up. It was hyped up. I thought the bar was going to be high to meet what I was told. You got our friend there who's worked in apparel at all sorts of different places for 30 years. He's like, this is honest to God the best short I've come across. And I was like, all right. He's just, I don't know about that. And they sent it, and it's awesome. It's incredible. I'm not BSing you. I asked Will off camera. I think you off camera. I was like, no, it's actually as good as he was talking about. Because we were ready to be, you know, he was overhyping it. Zach Short, I assume named after Zach Blair, ZAC. It's incredibly lightweight. It's about to be sweaty boy season. You know, that is coming around the corner. I would suggest you go to bdratty.com. Get the Zach Short. That is my recommendation for this specific episode. You can also use the promo code SGS25, which gets you 25% off at bdratty.com. A good amount, a good little discount there. That's my recommendation. You put me on the spot, and that's what I'm going with. All right? So thank you to Beach Dratty again. We'll be here all week with the Dratty Cabin. It's already the nomenclature. Smartin's texting us. What's going on at the Dratty house? And I said, it's cabin. It's a Dratty Cabin. And there are no chips, so stay the hell away. So we'll be here all week after each round. All right. We've dispensed with Rory, apparently.
No, already. I haven't dispensed. This is misconstruing everything I'm saying.
Okay. I haven't dispensed
with it. It just, you know, I wonder where on the priority level golf is.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Is that bad or good?
No, healthy I don't. I have no, like...
You did seem like really philosophical after his press conference. You're talking about like, I want to write about this thing, that. You seem like you made an impact.
I'm trying not to step on too many takes here. You know, this is the problem with writing and podcasting.
I think you just, you know,
but I
say
just,
the same thing every platform in the world. You know, you, go on
you
TikTok.
You listen to him.
Talk about Rory.
And you talk about, the thing that got me is somebody asked him about the Grand Slam and... Has it gotten easier? Has it gotten harder? And he said he thinks it's gotten easier because there's less pressure.
For him, okay, yeah.
And I always equate pressure and nerves when you're playing a golf tournament to the level of care that you have. And it seems to me I translate that to I don't really care about that as much anymore. And... You know, he talked, and it's understandable. There's more to his life now, a lot more. And it's something I've recently gone through, but, like, you have, like, a way different hashtag perspective on life after a kid and getting married, all these big life events. And I just think that at this point, golf isn't the number one thing on his plate. And I don't think that there's a judgment to make here. I think it happens to a lot of pros. It's just that Rory, and it's Rory's decision where it comes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily think, like, I won't be surprised if he wins. But I think that it's his decision. And there's nothing wrong with choosing to be, you know, more invested in it's, you know, we expect everybody to be to fulfill all of their potential. And I think at this point, you know, especially with the start of his career, Rory probably hasn't fulfilled his potential. And there's still time, like he said in the press conference, I still consider myself young. Like, you know, I've got a lot of time. And this might be just a lull in his career until a second wave comes. But it just, to me right now, it just doesn't seem like golf is number one in his life.
I think he's mentally twisted himself into a pretzel, and especially here, especially at Augusta National, but that's not necessarily new ground. I would say, I put out a call for one question. We may do more than one. It has to be esoteric. And this is less than esoteric, but it says non-Tiger division, but it's related to what we're talking about. Who would the crowds be most behind on Sunday with the lead? Spieth, Rory, you know, open. I think it's Rory. I think that would be, you know, Spieth is obviously a favorite here. And we're talking
not Jason Kokrak.
Non-Tiger. Who would crowds be the least behind? That's more
Paul
esoteric.
Casey.
I don't think there's enough antipathy towards Casey.
I mean,
he's just a guy.
That's a legitimate person that could contend, though.
Isn't he hurt maybe a little bit?
But it's a legit contender that I just don't think it would get any kind of buzz. I'm trying to think about who else would be that.
Kokrak's up there. He's in the running. Hoagie? Would people be out on Hoagie?
He's not a legit contender, though.
Hoagie? Best iron player in the world, maybe, at the moment. Top 10 strokes gained approach. Tommy Tables? I don't know. There's just, like, who has you know, engendered antipathy towards them? I don't know. Did you see?
What about Justin Rose?
Rosie? I just think people think he's fine and some sort of nice young British chap. I think probably, you know, that's the thing. Nobody in the crowd has the sort of level of I don't know, of angst or you know, perceived slights or reasons to dislike someone like we do, right? We come up with things out of thin air. The crowd generally is probably more
the
benevolent.
Patrons.
Yeah, the patrons, I should say. By the way, talking about antipathy, we did not talk about this on Monday.
We didn't even answer the question.
Golf, it's Rory. I said it's Rory. It's definitely Rory for the most crowd behind. I got to say, crowd not behind. I can't let this go without comedy.
Spieth could be it.
At the Chevron Championship, Beth Ann Nichols tweeted, the crowd started booing the shit out of the Chevron executive. That might be the golf moment of the year. The poor Chevron executive. I mean, he's poor. Not, you know,
he's not poor. He's not in poor at all. No sense.
But he goes up there. He goes, and of course they're leaving. You know, Palm Springs area, and starts getting lambasted with booze as they're trying to give out a trophy to Cup Show. Again, just had to call that out. Amazing moment. All right. Who's your answer there? Spieth? Rory?
I think Spieth.
More than Rory? Slam?
You know what? Like, I always go back to this because I my grandma is like 96 years old. And every time I see her, she asks me about Jordan Spieth. She does not watch golf. It's just
got
like
the grandma demo.
He's got like the American demo.
Yeah.
He's American. That's why I think, just simply because he's American.
There's a jingoism here. That's what you're suggesting.
Well, I'm not suggesting that. Maybe that's what it is. You're using fancy words that
I have rough
understandings of. But
no. I thought, you know, a cool thing while we're on Spieth, he's like an elder statesman. I watched him today, Tuesday. And like he played with Spawn, JJ Spawn, who was, you know, expecting to be home 3 days ago. And like, it was cool. Like Spawn's caddy is like talking to Spieth. Spieth's like pointing out like, oh yeah, the TV tower. They were on 18T. And he was like walking them through the changes and how it's a little bit pushed back. It's just amusing to think of Spieth like I don't know. It seems like he could be headed for like a Crenshaw role, right? At the Masters. I'm not suggesting in terms of architecture and things like that. He's like 28 or whatever he is, and he's like sort of this guiding light around him.
Rory was talking about that in his press conference. It's his 14th year here. He's like, it's almost half my life.
Yeah.
And then he started talking about life going quickly.
Oh, God.
I mean, I didn't mean this to be a Rory pod, but I get a sense that he understands his mortality, which I don't think is necessarily a good thing for a professional athlete.
Okay. No. I mean, he hasn't won a major in 8 years, or going in 8 years. It's not like a lull. You use the word lull. It's just
in the number of years Spieth has been coming to the Masters.
Sure. Right. And yeah. Yep. All right. What are other impressions of actually walking around out there? Do you want to do Tiger first? Is Tiger
Let's
better?
Talk Tiger.
Okay.
As of now, I'm
going on playing, or I think I'm going to play. As of now, is
he's playing.
Called. Yeah. Right.
I think when he got here, it was pretty clear that he was going to play.
Right.
The test run was the flight up there last week. He said that so much, and it was, hey, I wanted to see how it was out here. I felt good enough, and I'm playing. And I was standing by the clubhouse on Monday, and I was in a conversation, and it was unbelievable when Tiger walked up, because you heard the roar. I mean, I was 150 yards from the first tee, 100 yards from the first tee. You heard the roar. I didn't turn around because I was in this conversation, but you immediately knew who it was, and I got goosebumps. And I don't want that to sound at all like a fanboy kind of thing.
Right.
But it was just a moment where that doesn't happen on Monday practice rounds at anywhere.
It's not profound or original at this point to say, you know, talk about the crowd size, but it's worth acknowledging. Even like we know we're repeating a lot of everywhere else, and that's usually kind of just a talking point people just say because you got to fill up airtime, and so you talk about the crowds on TV, like the TV's got to fill it up atmosphere descriptions. Like that was a real thing on Monday in terms of the sheer number of people for a nine hole practice round on a Monday. It was ridiculous. And Justin Thomas said it's the most people he's ever played golf in front of. And we're talking again about Monday. And it's not like the U.S. Open going to like a golf starved market, right? Like a Seattle where like everybody's going whatever day they can get like ticket. Of course, the Masters, everybody goes to practice day, but like it's people who want to go see the course. It's people who have done and seen this before. It's also maybe not they don't sell like 60,000 tickets every day. But everyone still, that's the story that concentrated around that comeback. It was crazy.
It was amazing too, because Rory was, when Tiger was coming up nine was another moment. I didn't go out and like follow him around, but when Tiger was coming up nine, I was walking down 10 and Rory was coming up 18 and there's nobody following Rory.
Right.
It was just nuts. It's absolutely crazy. You're talking about one of the four most popular players in the world. Yeah. And there's nobody following them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's just people out seeing the golf course, really. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. It's just such an interesting thing to observe. I was by the clubhouse today, actually, when he walked out to practice. And he walked right by me. And I was talking to the security guard. I was waiting to meet somebody. And I was talking to the security guard. And the gentleman, he was just like, watch this crowd move. And he walked out. And all the crowd is over kind of by the first tee and scoreboard. He walked to the putting green. And like then there's nobody by the first tee. I wish I had taken like a picture of before and after. Yeah. Because it's going to be so exciting. He obviously said, you know, he was asked if he thought he could win. He thinks he can win.
Yeah.
The range balls we've seen people hit, or him hit, have been impressive. The shots, you know, Freddie was gushing. Everybody was gushing.
Billy Boy, you know, with the first proclamation on it. Here's my thing on Tiger that I think is getting... So the leg is clearly the number one story related to Tiger. Can he do this walk? It's obviously a big walk. That's not a new storyline. But I feel like we are getting so focused, solely focused on can he do this walk on this leg, on this reconfigured leg, that we're also forgetting... Like, we're talking about how it's one of the most challenging and hilly places for him that we're kind of forgetting
the back,
but also we're focusing too much on the physical. Like, oh, by the way, it's a hard walk for him, but this is also like the place where he can kind of play with his C game and make the cut. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he knows how to play this golf course better than anyone alive. And I think we're really focused on the physical, and rightly so, but we're kind of totally forgetting that the way he has played this golf course in the worst circumstances, coming back from a sex scandal, coming back with like having a busted ankle, having a bad knee. Like, I think he's going to make the cut. I don't think that's crazy. I think he's going to make the cut because I don't see that. Now, when he gets to the 54 holes and 72 holes, may that be a struggle? It seems like...
Especially that cold Saturday that looks like, you know. It could be that's like one of those days where problem. He just looks right. like you're just like, right. whoa.
Right. Anyways, that's been my sort of impression is like we are only talking about how hard a walk this is going to be for him. And that's true. But also like this is a course he knows how to play in his sleep and shoot 71, 72, 73. And I know there'll be those physical challenges, but there isn't a better course from a fit and knowledge and history perspective for him to come off of a year and a half break or play without 100% fitness or 100% game than Augusta National. Like, I just don't see him shooting 78 here.
I will say the one thing that is tough when you come back from a long absence from competitive golf is scoring in competitive golf. And what happens is there's a lot of sloppy mistakes. And I think the telling thing that I always look at from players coming back, look at his par five scoring early in the week or first day, and that's going to tell the story. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens when you have to string shots together, like par fives become a testament of sharpness because it's about what happens, you know, around the greens and leaving yourself in the right spot. And that's the difference, especially at Augusta, between birdies and pars or birdies or even birdies and bogeys. So I would really look at par five scoring as the barometer of whether he's going to hang around on Thursday and actually like really be a factor. Because I do agree with you. This is a perfect place for him. But in all those other instances, he had tournament reps in the lead up. And he always talks about reps. And tournament reps and getting reps in before majors. And this is going to be the first time we see him really come into a major cold, if I recall correctly.
Aside from the 2010 Masters off the sex scandal. And I mean, he did the chip yips. He took like, that was only 4 or 5 weeks off. I mean, but that was with a malady that was mental and physical. So I don't know. I've come around to thinking like, of course he's going to like make the cut here. It's Augusta and it doesn't mean he's going to win or contend, but he just doesn't like put up the Rory, you know, 41. He just, even when he has, when he's spraying it or he has a C game. And then for all accounts, the shots are all there and the hands are there and the feels are there and the speed is there. It's just like, will he wear down at, you know, hole 26 or hole 30? You know, you just don't know.
So. Yeah, it's awesome. It's brings a whole dimension to the tournament, and I think most importantly, it's brings the dimension because he, like, the tournament, if he doesn't play, would have maybe been about Phil not being here, and, you know,
mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot, honestly. There wasn't, like we talked about, the storyline, it just snuck up on us.
His worst finish at Augusta, it's just crazy, since 96 is T40.
Any MCs?
None.
I mean, a lot of those starts weren't under the best of circumstances, physically.
Yeah, 2010, T4. 2015, T17. 2018, T32.
So, I'm
2020, T38.
I'm not dismissing the challenge.
T38 with what? Maybe make a 10 or a 9?
I think it was a 10.
10.
Yeah.
T38 with a 10.
Yeah. That's wild. You make a 10 on the weekend. There's whatever, 60 guys in the field at that point, and you made a 10, and you're 38. Anyways, I'm not suggesting the physical is not going to be a challenge. It's a very tough course to come back, but I just think we're negating some of the history here. Can we talk about the FootJoy thing? I know everyone's tweeted about it. I don't want to pop Nike a little bit, but like, how? What a disaster! An absolute, unmitigated national disaster for this apparel company, born out of footwear, born, you know, by making footwear and being, you know, having ingenuity. Their main horse, main athlete for the last 20 years. What happened? You have to, like, I'm not here to fluff FootJoy, you know, at all. But Nike, and they, I don't know if they got, they just, has he not been talking to them? Did he not give them a heads up that they could have put everything they had to bear on this?
I don't think they could get it ready. I don't think they had the right shoe for the situation.
He talked about it today, right? A little bit, well, the stability
thing.
Well,
if you think about the shoe he's wearing, like, everybody, it probably is really super stable at the bottom, right?
Right.
And like, you think about Nike shoes, and they're really flexible.
Right.
It's just like a complete different construction is my guess, you know? And
don't figure out a construction.
Well, I don't know.
Anyway,
he's not going out there in something uncomfortable.
Right. We're not gear guys. We never talk about this in a serious light.
Maybe we need to get a shoe person. We should have gotten a shoe person.
We should have gotten a shoe guy on. I cannot believe, for Nike's sake, that this has happened. It just has to be a 5-alarm fire drill over there. That's all. Anything else on Tiger?
I'm just excited. That's all. It's so cool. And you know, from where it was, it's amazing. And yeah, I mean, it's encouraging that beyond this week, we might get Tiger at other majors and Tiger at more Masters. When a year ago, you thought that was never going to happen.
He wasn't going to play.
I mean, we were talking about, we hope he can walk and participate in activities with Charlie and Sam. And
right.
Now we're going to get to see him play Augusta National in the Masters.
Right, right. All right, let's get to our Masters fact of the day while we're on the subject of Masters. It is brought to you.
You know, every time you say Masters fact of the day,
you do.
I like break out into, my daughter's really into Sesame Street.
Sure.
I just think of the letter of the day.
That's the letter of the day.
Yeah. Hey.
I don't want to start singing. I am familiar with the song. Yeah. It's brought to you by Elijah Craig, which is poured in front of me right now on the table here at the Dratty Cabin. Every golfer has a unique style of play. That's part of what we love about watching the pros at the Masters. It also happens to be what we love about bourbon. Take Elijah Craig, for example, Andy. Every bottle of their award-winning small batch carries a signature warm spice and subtle smoke flavor. Right now, I have it in front of me neat in a Masters cup, a plastic cup. I don't know if that's, you know, putting lipstick on a pig there. Shouldn't it be like a well, more, you know, the only thorough thing that and hardy up glass?
The Masters brand, you know.
Yeah, that's the, true. That's
you
true.
Know, that's like kind of a sandwich. That's true. Of,
are we,
you know,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, you got a good brand absolutely. In it. You got a good brand on the cup. And then you got a cup that might not, you know, be... There's
so it's
two,
plastic yeah. from wherever, you know, who knows where that came from. Pick up a bottle today. We got a promo code. Pick up a bottle
we
today or
we
order online. Order online at drizzly.com. You get $5 off a bottle of Elijah Craig when you use the promo code FRIEDEGG5. That's all caps, no spaces, FRIEDEGG5. You get $5 off drizzly.com. I think Drizzly is BC guys. I think they made that probably,
super convenient.
Probably doing pretty well.
This
yeah,
is,
it comes right to the door.
Thing. Like, you know, you're sitting at home and you yes. don't want to miss some of the Masters.
Yep. Yep. So enjoy Fire the Masters up. With Golf Signature Sip. Elijah Craig, go to drizzly.com and use the promo code FRIEDEGG5. Shotgun Start is brought to you by Elijah Craig, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, Bardstown, Kentucky. 47% alcohol by volume. Elijah Craig reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely. What is our Elijah Craig Masters fact of the day? It comes from Bama Bearcat, who I will be meeting tomorrow. I may see him over at Augusta National. I don't know if I'll have a bottom for him yet, but we will make sure he is duly compensated. Bama Bearcat on Twitter. By 1933, Gene Sarazen had won two U.S. Opens, three PGAs, and one British Open. So why didn't the best player in the world compete in the first Masters? Sarazen said years later that he remembered receiving an invitation, but that he didn't give the new tournament much thought. Sarazen sounds like us opening our email. We've missed a lot of big emails and, you know, sponsors Tons. And things like that. It's like, oh, we just didn't get back to you. I mean, we might have missed.
Sometimes I forget to open my mail.
Your snail mail, like the yeah. USPS. Yeah, of course. Of course, he pays attention to that stuff. Anyways, he got the invitation. He didn't give the new tournament much thought. Sarazen agreed to play then in 1934 when he was invited by Bobby Jones instead of Clifford Roberts. And he promptly tied Jones's course record of 65 the first time he played the course in a practice round. So pay attention to that mail out there. You never know when you might be getting an invitation to a new golf tournament that could one day become the most powerful brand and event in golf. All right, anything else on Tiger? Feels like we've dispensed with, or you know,
I think we've gotten that out of there.
What are your impressions of the golf course? You've now walked around, you've traversed. Is it hillier than you expected, than you saw on TV?
I'll tell you what gets muted by the big hills and the talk of the big hills. There's all those like little bumps and stuff. And you know, some of them, being a little bit romantic, these original bumps are a little out of play, but they're just all these cool little humps and bumps. And obviously the greens. I think the thing that always stands out to me about Augusta and particularly in person is that there's so many courses that say, oh, I'm not gonna cut that slope as green because, you know, we could never put a pin there. And that thinking at Augusta, like that is the stuff that makes Augusta so special, is all the area that you'd never be able to put a pin, but it dispenses of shots and sends them.
That's the word of the podcast. This is unplanned. Go ahead.
Yeah. Tumbling in different directions or funneling them towards pins. And that's really the cool thing when you get out and you can really, like, I think one of the neat things, and obviously I'm going to be there all week, so I have a lot more time than most people are afforded. But I'm just going around and I try and see the greens from as many angles as you can. I think that's really the star of it. I think one thing I've thought a lot about is one of the things that I think, like, it plagues a little bit of 11. I think 11's a world better hole than it was, but there's still this premise of them trying to prohibit things from happening, you know, prohibit the idea, like they're worried about players going at things and they're worried about score in this weird way. And I think that was the disappointing thing when I saw 11, is like the area on the right's just really weird of the green. It's just like super deep and it kind of sits there and it's like a bathtub. And this is so nitty gritty inside baseball Friday's architecture stuff, but
Masters, like, yeah. Everyone does that though. But it's your beat. The Friday
Have
the corner.
And I just like, I look at it and it's, you're over there on the right, and it's, they put it in there to just make it hard. It's not, I think there, it removes a lot of like cool shots we could see, whether it be bumps and stuff, because it's like, you're in this like effectively artificial hollow over there, and you have to flop it up out of it or putt it.
And I saw Kisner and Stu Hagestad putt it exclusively today.
It seems like those are the only two options. I watched Cam Champ maybe dump a ball or two in the water from over there. So it's going to be really hard. I think that aspect, and I'm not, I haven't like settled in on this. I want to watch it in the tournament. Mm-hmm. This is something that I'm not like solidified as a take. Like, I don't like it. It's more of the fact of, it just feels like they're trying to protect something, and I don't understand why. Like, the,
what do you mean they're trying to protect? Like a,
I feel
a
like
score?
They're trying to protect a score, and okay. It to me, it just feels like the place should just allow. It should be a canvas, and there should be repercussions for going certain places. It shouldn't be as bluntly obvious as the penalty is over on the right of 11. It just is too obvious for the golf course. Like, the golf course is filled with these intricacies, and you learn where bad spots are. That one just has like a sign, don't hit it here.
But isn't everyone doing that?
Yeah.
It seems like everybody I watched again is like bailing.
It's just, when you're over there, then it reduces your options, right? It just it just doesn't feel like it truly embodies the character. And again, I'm open to watch. I want to watch the golf tournament played and kind of settle in. Like, that's, it's hard to like just have a steadfast opinion on something from watching practice rounds, right?
Yeah.
And I think it in general, I think the other thing that I watched Cam Champ play the hole. He came up like 30 yards short of the trees. I think that's like a big thing that got overblown in the ANWA, is that these trees are going to be like this huge impact. And he was like, he hit a drive and his caddy goes, that was perfect.
Well, I don't know what, because they were up there today, right? I mean, Morikawa was in there. I don't know what happened there. Did he hit a four iron?
Maybe
or
he hit a duck.
I don't know.
They were up there.
No, Stu was like, they weren't in the trees, but they were, you know, even with the trees. Morikawa was for sure. I don't know. I mean, Cam Champ's, you know, the longest guy out there. I think they're going to
It was into the wind yesterday. Okay. And that, maybe that's what it was. Is that it was in the afternoon and it was into the wind. But I don't know. And it's going to be wet, so it's not going to bound down there.
Yeah, yeah. To be clear, we're talking about the three remaining trees that remain on the right side. They extended out. And I would like to come up with a naming contest for these three. I don't know. I was joking. We were going to name them the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. Something that's a group of three, the Musketeer. There's just these islands. And then you got the pine straw around them. You know, these islands out there in the middle of fairway. I think
got
we
nice
got
a catch basin over there too. My favorite thing.
They're thrown out there.
This beautiful slope, and they decide to scoop it out and put a basin in there. It's like, oh God.
Your head's on your forehead.
Well, it's just like, I know people don't want to hear about this stuff, but
I think
it's
they
just
do.
This like magnificent house with like a, you know, a patch of aluminum siding on the right side of it that you hope nobody sees.
One thing I was thinking about today is like, only at the Masters though is like, and it's not even just fried egg. Like, this is your beat. You know a ton about this. You want to talk about this architecture. But like Golf Channel, at mainstream, the Golf Digest, like they spend so much time talking about like a couple trees. Like, only at the Masters do they like really drill down on that. And like, they care more about the golf tournament. And like, what's more realistic is like, there's seven more holes after it, and probably, you know, most guys are going to make a par. Is it going to really impact the tournament a ton?
It's certainly not the most dynamic hole.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that it's going to be more dynamic this year than it has been.
Dynamic, you mean range of scores.
Yeah. Okay. I actually, like that increased penalty, and this is why I'm not completely settled on my opinion on that right side, because I think that increased penalty on the right could encourage more play towards the pin than it has. That's been the problem, is that all the play is away. And You know, I just generally think that a lot of things in golf architecture are counterintuitive to what you think. And so the natural reaction to, oh, it's too soft and easy over there is to make it harder. And that's usually the wrong answer. That's like the same thing with Tiger's hitting it too far. We have to protect the course against Tiger. We should narrow the fairways. Right. Well, that just plays more into his hands. But that's like the natural inclination is always to go to like that. And it seemed to me the natural inclination, if you're sitting in a room talking about the 11th with a committee, you would say, well, you know, the problem is everybody bails right and it's an easy up and down. And the natural inclination would say, well, why don't we make the right side harder? And that's what they've done.
They lowered it a little bit, right? A foot or two.
Yeah, it's really deep. I mean, I took a picture of Cam Champ over there. It's like above his head.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
so you got to putt up a slope or lob one.
It's like
lob
a six-feet slope.
Okay.
And if you go back and look at the Larry Mize chip, Larry Mize was like above the bunker. Now, he was a little bit further right, but it was just... You know, it wasn't a depression. And I just think that's, I don't know. It's just a more obvious situation. It makes it more hit it here or else, which isn't the Masters flavor. The tee shot, though, has completely switched, right? The tee shot went from like the most, one of the most one-dimensional shots on the course, hit it in the fairway or else you're chipping out.
Yeah. Or find kitty litter alley.
Yeah, and you have to hit a fade, and you have to hit it to this one spot. And now the tee shot's actually like really like freewheeling, like wide open, and it's beautiful. It's like great. So it's funny because the tee shot's gone from that, and now the second shot. But it's a second shot golf course, so that's where I'm complete. I just want to watch play on it.
Yeah, one more. I just want to talk about 15 real quick. I thought it was interesting to hear. JT,
can you tell your story about 15?
15. Okay, this is a good story. I was saving this for odds and ends of observations, but 15. So I you go to 14 and it like dead ends there, and you kind of got to walk up 15, right? And you can't see the tee because it's way back. And so I'm like waiting at the crosswalk on 15, and this ball comes, you know, landing up there. Landed pretty close, like had to be. I don't know, just nowhere in the vicinity of where we see balls go and where we see, you know, those heroic second shots. Probably 230 drive, I don't know, 240. So. And I was like, holy shit, how far back did they move that tee? The balls are landing here. What is, how far? I thought it was 15 yards. They push it like 60, 100? So I'm waiting there on the rope line for the guys to come off the tee, and coming up over the crest is Larry Mize. And Bernhard Leonard was like, all right. That, I guess. And we had another colleague on the ground who did not think, did Mize get to the fairway on 11? Or you said by like 15, 20 yards, but barely got to the fairway on 11. So that's another, I mean, that's our favorite sort of annual thing. Like, it's just, it's the heroic
shot,
to watch
the
these guys
tracker.
Grind their ass
the,
off.
The ability to see every single one of Larry Mize's shots is incredible because you see where he's playing from. And it's like he's hitting 3-wood into 1. He's hitting 3-wood into 11. He's hitting 3-wood.
Apparently, he barely got to the fairway on 11 and then hit 3-wood short of the water.
5,
on 11.
He can't get over the hill on 5. It comes rolling back to him.
It's unbelievable. A different game. I was just 15. Because you don't know who's practicing. You don't have the tee sheet. And it's like, wow. And then coming up, sauntering up the hill. It's Larry Mize. I would just say 15. When that first announced it, I was like, that just seems like not a lot, like changing much. But I've heard these guys talk about it now. And it's like, it seems to maybe have a real impact. And wind dependent for sure. But Colin Morikawa was like, you are absolutely going to have to think about this shot. JT was like, I mean, that shot's hard as it was. To begin with, I think you're 3-wood, 4-wood, like you're going to 5-wood, you're going to be 240 into the wind, 250 into the wind. There's going to be that shot come back into play. And like, you really have to think about it. And today I watched Fleetwood and Shane Lowry lay back. And they were doing like the layback to, you know, pretty far, like a full wedge or whatever, not going way down there. Jeff Ogilvie's talked about the danger of going as far up and to the right as you can, because that's a really hard shot. But it just seems like a lot of guys are tinkering with that hole right now and how they could play it. And it may end up being, you know, there's no wind and they just hit it up there and they're hitting 6 irons. But you had a photograph like really illustrated the depth, the lack of depth there. Everybody has hears about that. I would encourage you to go check out your photo journal that you got up there on Monday, like really cool angles of that hole and others. But I just think 15 changes might have more impact than I thought in terms of how that hole is played. And of course, they wouldn't have done it unless they were trying to impact.
This is something I was thinking about, is that every player talked about those changes. You just ran down a litany of players who talked about them. And when Tiger was asked about the changes,
what'd he say?
He went to 11, and then he talked about 13 being softened, which was, you know, he just talked about the greens.
What do you mean by softened?
So reduction of slope.
Okay.
And I'm guessing it's to accommodate the ever increasing green speeds. So we're getting less slope for faster, but to get more pins. And that's what he said. They only softened to get more pins for the most part. And he's like, there should be more pins, but he didn't say a word about 15, which to me tells me that he's seen 15 like that.
Yep, he's played it.
These guys have never seen 15 where you actually had to make that. And to him, it's not a change.
Yeah.
So that was just something that popped into my brain about JT, all these young guys who just bully that hole. They've bullied that hole for their lives.
Right.
They've never seen it when it was it had, like, if you hit it in the fairway and you maybe catch it on the neck a little.
You might have a wood in.
Yeah.
You might have a,
And then all of a sudden it becomes a lot different.
Yeah. They talk about the difference between hitting like 230 and 240 or 50 is massive for these guys, especially into that green.
I mean, the difference between 220 and 240 for a tour pro is huge.
Yep.
I think Joseph LaMagna has said so much with me. It's like there's like big differences when you get close to the green, and then huge differences actually from 220 plus.
Yep. One more. I know we're doing core stuff, but this is like mandatory for Augusta National. You talked about the softening at 13. You talked about the pinnable area or the non-pinnable areas that sort of change trajectories of ball. I thought it was interesting to hear Spieth talk about the putting there. I want to get back to this, the hole locations, pin placements, and the slope. He goes, you know, putting always seems to inspire you here. Why? He goes, they don't have to trick anything out. I think more and more on the PGA Tour, we're seeing hole locations like the hole slopes here, and they find the one little crown, or they go to the crown of a ridge, and you go here. You just don't see that very often at Augusta. I'd say, like, I mean, they don't do slope hole locations near slope, right, on the tour. Here they're fast and firm. If you hit it at the right spot, you've got a chance. If you don't, you've got to play defense. I just really enjoy it. I think the speed of the greens, I enjoy faster greens, and, you know, using my imagination, you know, around those greens. But I thought it was interesting. He kind of called out PGA Tour hole locations for getting a little tricky.
Well, I think the underlying aspect of that is the architecture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, PGA Tour greens, they're pretty flat around the hole in general. What Augusta has is it's pretty flat. If you hit if you hit a great shot, you have a very good look, right?
Yeah.
It's flat, but it's a very small area that you have to hit the great shot into from a very difficult lie. And then if you miss that spot, this is that unpinnable slope. That unpinnable slope, those ridges that create those little areas, will send your ball tumbling far away. So you might have only missed it by 15 feet, and your ball ends up 40 feet away.
Yeah.
On the tour, your ball ends up 15 feet away because they don't have those pronounced slopes.
I gotcha. That makes sense.
Sawgrass has a little bit of that, and that's what's made Sawgrass an iconic course. Riviera has some of that too. If you think about the great golf courses on the PGA Tour, they have those things. The courses we lament about, TPC Sod Farm, that does not have anything like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Ball's kicking away. One more. We got to do this. Spieth. We're not doing our normal quote roundup, but we're getting a few in here with Tiger, JT.
Maybe we'll do quote roundup tomorrow.
Just a Wednesday podcast of quotes.
We could do Ridley and quotes.
Oh, the Ridley. Yeah,
we could do Ridley. You could just read through some quotes.
Just read his transcript.
I think
dramatic
we should get
reading.
Into the quick quotes.
Oh, like Kokrak. What do you have to say about playing? Somebody asked about what it was like to play a practice round by himself. He's like, you know. He didn't want to say, like, I don't have friends, but I like going out by myself. And, it was like, why didn't you try to play with Tiger? It's like, oh, I think he probably had his game set. And I didn't, like, just trying to maneuver out of that one. We'll go through the quick quotes. But while we're on Spieth, not a change, three. What they change with three? Can you talk to us about that?
So the front
new
of
green
the front of it, yeah, they resurfaced the green.
The front.
And the front of it, the front left of it, a lot of the greens at Augusta have these kind of like rims.
Yep.
Again, this is not something that's exciting to talk about.
No.
But these rims, I don't think, I didn't see it in 1934. It's hard to say, but I don't think that those rims were part of the golf course. The third had one of those rims on the left side, and I think players grew accustomed to that little that rim. What it does is it kind of saves shots.
Saves some, yeah. So
and that rim has been removed, and it's a it's what it should be. It's a really really beautiful line, right? It just falls off like the way you would want a green to fall off, like yep. It, you know, a natural slope would fall off, right? There's yep. No like little build up and then a fall off. So now that what it's done is it's created this clean edge, and it's made that left pin more severe.
Sunday pin, usually the Sunday pin, and
but
Spieth that.
So they've made that a little bit tougher,
right?
So that they've taken something,
right?
What and Spieth complained, and I don't know if you have the full quote
I have
from,
it. I
but
mean,
he complained. We'll get to that, but like keep this in context. They added a ton of short grass on the left, which makes it far easier.
The right
to get
or the left?
The left, over the
okay.
bunker.
I gotcha. Okay.
So yep. That short grass over the left on the bunker makes it way easier. That's the spot all of them should be hitting it to get it to the back right pin.
I see.
And that wasn't an available shot last year.
That's
and that should be like a
Bryson
really
lost
astute
his ball
yeah,
in their left.
A yeah. really astute player will hit it over there and they will have a really easy pitch up there for to make a birdie. And that was an unavailable shot. So one pin's gotten harder. Mm-hmm. Another pin on the green that is used one day of the week has gotten a lot easier.
So you usually don't hear players express this sort of unequivocal disapproval. And I mean, it's disapproval with this change. On three, this is Spieth. It's pretty severe on that left side now. It was always severe. Now it's pretty wicked. Just a little bit of a change in the drop of the depth once the ball feeds over the green. But it's such a small area with firm surfaces and no balls are staying up short now. If it just goes over, you're really tough position. It's almost like that Sunday pin was so challenging and now it's almost an automatic layup when you hit a wedge. So you're not tempting to go near the green or on the green. So I think that's kind of a bit odd. Just because it was already so difficult. I would say calling a change kind of a bit odd from someone who has a fair amount of authority about the place already, as we discussed. I'm not suggesting he's right, wrong, or indifferent. It was just one of the more interesting quotes that I don't know got a lot of play.
I'd be curious if all the rims got removed, what the players would think.
Yeah. I mean, they're used to playing with backboards every week, right? I mean, the rims, backboards, they need some sort of...
I do. The
apparatus.
Grandstand placements at Augusta are terrific.
Yeah.
They're so far out of play, you know, and it's so funny when you're out there watching and somebody hits it into the grandstand because it's so peaceful out there and it's like a jarring, you know, the grandstands are wood and stuff,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's like a jarring loud noise. You're like, whoa.
Actually coming like four they could, but I mean, it's a par three. I know it's longer. It's not like you're ripping three wood into it, but. Four, you could, it's kind of in behind it, you know. There's not a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like where they would, like what would be the most
like
offensive
you
backboard
really
spot.
Bad, you have to hit a really bad shot to get it into the grandstands in most cases.
What would be the most offensive like backboard they could put out there if the tour came
behind
in?
Behind 12.
Well, I was thinking 12. But then you'd have them ricocheting back into the water. Because it's
well, you could do a soft tarp. Like you could angle it a certain way. you could funnel them into the back bunker.
I was gonna say 12. All right, I think 12. We'll find a way to put 12, one back there.
12 and 13. Yeah. And yeah. 15. 15. They put one right behind 15.
Yeah, in between 16.
Right on top of the pond.
Yeah.
Which is actually in play. I poo-pooed the pond being in play. That was a bad take.
What, the Q&A 16 pod?
Yeah, a 15 pod.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Okay. I think that does it for the course. Do you have any other impressions walking around? I mean, we kind of hit on a fair amount of the changes.
I mean, I can drop some impressions on the course every day going out from now on.
You will. So, we'll see a lot of it in action.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get our picks to win.
I did write a piece about the 11th hole that will air tomorrow. So you can read about my
publish
tomorrow. Yeah. Sorry. I don't write as much. You know, I'm more of a talking
Let's
guy.
Let's do these esoteric questions. These are so good. Does the redesign of 11 make it more of a hitter's or pitcher's hole? Asking for Leishman's sake. I don't even know what that means. Is it a hitter's or pitcher's hole?
Well, I think it's a pitcher's hole. Because, and that would
what does that mean? What are we saying?
Well, you know, the big ballpark becomes a pitcher's park, right? Like, what is it? Seattle's super big? Isn't Seattle a super big ballpark?
Yeah,
it's a great pitcher's park?
Yeah.
So the tee shots become luxurious that it becomes about precision on the second shot. It becomes about a guy that can keep the ball, that can bat it around, has ultimate bat control. You know, he can hit the ball to
contact.
Right field. Yeah.
Contact. That's good. All right, so we're saying,
if you end up over on the right, like you got to have a deft touch. You got to be able to lay down the suicide squeeze when it calls for it.
God, there's so many. I should have pre-approved these.
We could get to more. We could do
we'll
Q&A.
Do more.
Why don't we just do a quick Q&A pod tomorrow?
We'll do a few more.
All right. And Q&A.
I love the hitters and pitchers hole. It's pretty good.
We could put another ad in there. We could satisfy sponsorship.
Just lard up the podcast a little bit more. All right. Who's your pick to win?
I'm taking Brooksy.
One and done?
Yeah, I'm taking him for one and done. My full repertoire, I always pick with my one and done in mind, but I do believe that I like his, it's a major, and he plays great in majors.
Confirmed.
And I don't know if you've heard of this, he plays great in majors, and he played really well in Austin, played great in Austin, so I like his form coming in. He has to feel snubbed about not getting a press conference. I truly believe that. He didn't get a press. This is the stuff that happened.
Do you think he turned it down? It makes no sense. And I'm not disparaging anyone who came through there. But like Sam Burns, Xander, Scottie Scheffler's number one player in the world. He should. But there's just guys that aren't accomplished as Brooks.
This comes from Paulie.
Yeah, Paulie got me on the Brooks train too.
Writes on the Fried Egg website. We have a Masters Hub. You can find everything there. Go to thefriedegg.com. There's a lot of articles there.
Another ad.
I'm just larding it up here. But this is a great stat from Pauly. Brooks has finished top 10 in 15 of his last 22 majors. Just how good is that? As a frame of reference, Tiger's most top 10s in a 22-major stretch in his career is 18.
I like it.
That's...
It's a good stat.
He's healthy. He's playing well. He's
always done well at the Masters.
And that's the other thing he pointed out is like last year, for example, he was like one of his non-top tens was last year when he couldn't even squat down to read a putt.
Yeah. This is boring. I was going to say the same player for many of the same reasons.
Take Ollie?
Who?
Is he a sleeper? Ollie?
Who's Ollie?
Jose Maria?
Oh, I thought it was like Ollie Osborne in the field again. No. I'm going with Brooks Koepka. For money of the same reasons. I'm not going to repeat yourself. He does well at the majors. He's kind of being lurking, right? I don't know why you don't give a four-time major winner more hype than he gets. And he's always done well at Augusta National when healthy. So I'm going with Koepka. Paulie sold me. Who's the oldest player to make the cut? I saw that was a question. Larry Mai is going to bat it around. I don't know. We'll do that at Q&A next
Bernie's
week.
Bernie's getting up there.
Do you have a dark horse sleeper for your DFS fans out there? We are a picks and gambling podcast. Dark horse or sleeper? I don't even know what qualifies as that.
I started looking into the rookies because of Zalatoris last year and the youth. And I actually really like two guys. I like Cam Young, even though he doesn't pitch the ball well. But I really have got myself in on
Taylor.
On Gooch. Yeah. Gucci man. Taylor Gooch, he's fifth in around the greens and 15th in approach.
Good combo, good recipe.
And he's been like quietly, like it's just been like a quiet, the normal, he's had the normal progression as of, if you went back 10 years, everybody would, like Taylor Gooch is like the format of tour players.
Yeah.
He's just gotten a little better every year. And because he's 30 or whatever he is, he gets overlooked. But it's been just this beautiful ascension of a player. And he's become really consistent. He's played really well. And I just think that game's going to he's a plus guy. He's only negative in strokes gained off the tee. And I was like, it's just barely negative. And I looked at his stats. It's like he averages like 303 off the tee. It's not like he's a poofer. Like,
right.
303 is now 90th on the tour in distance.
You know what we just blew over? It was our favorite Tuesday segment at Augusta. Favorite tee times.
I know.
You want to rip through them? I'm going to do real quick. My favorite one is Stu Hagestad.
You know, Slenderman. Will needs to eat. Will hasn't been out of the house. We haven't let Will out of the house all day.
Where's Will? Oh, that's, don't talk like that. Come on. Like he's being held against his will. God.
He said that we were talking about whether to order in or go out.
8 o'clock.
And Will goes, well, I really vote for going out.
And now it's 8 o'clock.
Because I'm the only one that hasn't left the house all day.
Oh, God. I like Hagestad and Sandy Lyle. It's a great one. Billy Ho, Psycho Billy.
Why don't we just save this for a Wednesday pod?
Okay.
I don't want to overpromise here.
I'm suspecting that may not come to fruition, but we'll see.
Maybe it's a Thursday morning.
Everyone enjoy your Wednesdays. Everyone enjoy your Tuesday evenings. We are pumped to be at the Dratty Cabin all week. So grateful to be back. I think we're having a lot of fun. Have daily podcasts, maybe a Wednesday podcast in there too, but certainly after every tournament round going forward. Thanks again.